That revolution starts right now. You are listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. This is Sue Hildebrand. The Real Issue is a public affairs talk show, and we're here every Wednesday night from 6 until 7 p.m. This edition of The Real Issue is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Paradise Community Guild, fostering community by nurturing creativity, practicing stewardship of nature, and promoting values of sustainability. Paradise Community Guild invites all people of goodwill and community spirit to help us carry out that intent. To get involved, visit paradiseguilds.org. You can also find them on Facebook. You can also give them a call at 530-762-1490. So as the midterm election is 1 week closer than it was last week, we continue our coverage of local races, and we start this week with ballot propositions. We'll first talk with a Chico City Council candidate who is running to represent District 6, which is on the eastern side of Chico. It is a very strange-shaped district, making you wonder if there was intentional gerrymandering done to ensure two of the candidates from the same political party didn't have to compete against each other. We'll then turn to the California ballot Proposition 1, which, if passed, would amend the state constitution to prohibit the state from interfering with or denying an individual's reproductive freedom. Reproductive freedom is defined in Prop 1 to include a right to an abortion and a right to contraceptives. Shannon Oliveri-Hovis, director of NARAL Pro-Choice California, will join us to talk about exactly what that proposition means and what it means for, really, if we take a snapshot of where we are in this country in terms of reproductive freedom. All of that starting at the bottom of the hour. Just as a reminder, you can watch the League of Women Voters Candidate Forum on the Oroville City Council, the mayor, and the treasurer tonight starting at 7 p.m. on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link on the League's website. Just look for the Butte County League of Women Voters. And tomorrow night, you can watch the Candidate Forum for the Paradise Town Council and the Paradise Parks and Rec at the Paradise Town Hall up in Paradise starting at 7 p.m. That's tomorrow night. And then as a reminder, next Tuesday at the Chico Masonic Center, you can watch the candidates forum for the Chico City Council and Chico Unified School District. Again, that's next Tuesday, September 27th, starting at 7 p.m. at the Chico Masonic Center. An update of sorts, Congressman Doug LaMalfa has yet to agree to appear at the candidate forum. So a forum for CD1, Congressional District 1, may not take place because their rule is unless all of the candidates appear, the forum will not happen. So I know that Max Steiner is willing, but Congressman, the incumbent Congressman Doug LaMalfa, has not committed to appearing at that candidate forum. So to kick off our election coverage tonight, on the phone with me is Jessica Gianola, who is running to represent Chico's 6th district on the Chico City Council. District 6 is a very oddly shaped district that can be loosely described as the eastern portion of the city of Chico. Jessica Giannola is a first-time candidate for elected office, and I am very happy to welcome you to The Real Issue, Jessica Giannola.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you for having me on. I'm excited to go through this process as running as a candidate for our Chico citizens.
Yeah, running for office is hard, but that shouldn't stop us, of course, from doing hard things, because ultimately you're participating in democracy in really the most important way. Voting is one thing, working on a campaign is another thing, but throwing your hat in the ring takes a lot of courage, and it sure takes a lot of work. So thanks for being with me here tonight. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Yes, it is a lot of work and a lot of sacrifice, and I do have a lot of respect for people who step up and take that chance of putting themselves out there, because it is the benefit of their community that they're doing it, typically, and that's what you want to see, is someone
right.
that is invested in right. community welfare. Yeah.
Well, Jessica Giannola, you are a first-time candidate, which is even scarier. You know, this is the first time you're doing it, and so many folks may not know who you are. If somebody, you know, listens in on the Chico City Council every couple of weeks, they might know your name. But I do want to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself to listeners. Who are you?
Thank you. Well, my name is Jessica, and it's spelled with one S, so a little bit unique there. And I'm one of our community members when it comes down to it. I'm a mom like a lot of people out here. I'm a grandma, and I went to Chico State, and my husband and I were able to purchase our home here in Chico with the help of a Chico Down Payment Assistance Program, and we both work hard at our jobs and raise our children, and we adopted one of our daughters through the foster system, and I've been very involved in our community with just hands-on helping with park cleanups and advocating for more housing for all of our different income levels of people in our area that need housing and affordable housing, and very involved with city council as well and that policy making on a local level, and just seeing how we as a community can lend our voice to the needs that we see and possible resolutions that we think will work
to
make our collective experiences improved.
Jessica Giannola, I've been watching the Chico City Council. I mean, since the pandemic, it's so easy to watch, because it's on Zoom. But even before that, I wasn't a dedicated attendee at city council meetings, but I went to a lot of them and I followed it pretty closely. And it was just a few years ago that every time I tuned in and there was comment from the public, you were speaking. And I want to ask you to talk about what inspired you to actually step up and say, I'm going to run. I want to be sitting up there.
Yeah, it was a few years. It was probably like 4 years ago I started going to Chico City Council meetings. And I started going as a result. My husband actually went to the meeting first, and it was on behalf of the Stonegate development that's right next to our home. And he and some neighbors went together, and there were so many people present. It was standing room only. And they went to voice their feelings about protecting our area and the environment near us, and that for me, I hadn't been to a city council meeting before, and so I was surprised that people could do that. I just didn't know that we can be that involved. And after finishing my education at Chico State, part of one of our assignments was that we go to a city council meeting or write letters to the editor and see how involved we can become with our local policies. And so I went. And I've seen this process that I just wasn't aware of before. We could actually make a difference in our community by speaking, by sharing with our policymakers needs that we were aware of. And maybe they weren't aware of things that are happening in our city, and so we wanted to share those and ask for help. And how do we fix this problem that many of us are facing? And every meeting you go to, you know that the next meeting, there'll be a new issue or we are revisiting one that we've already looked at before, and maybe we need some more details on it. And so I find it hard, once I got involved with going to these meetings, speaking up, I find it hard not to go and not to use my voice, because I feel like if we can, we should. If we're able to, then we should be able to have the opportunity, at least, to go and speak on behalf of our community. And that's what I love. I love that part of democracy, that we can do that here in our country.
It is. It's interesting. Once you sort of understand the politics, I often equate politics with you know, sort of football, you know, and here's my one sports analogy for my sport ball analogy for this edition of The Real Issue. But I often equate politics to football or baseball or whatever, is that, you know, we can understand the players and we can understand the strategy and we can, you know, count up all the scoring and, you know, and we can do all of that stuff. And that's exactly what we do in politics. And the more you know the players and the more you understand the issues, the more you're just hooked. And the difference between, you know, politics and football is that at the end of the day, politics really matters. And I know I'm going to get some rotten hate mail that says, how dare you? But the thing is, it's like football, whether I pay attention or not, doesn't affect my life. But politics, whether I pay attention or not, is still impacting my life. And so it's almost hard to turn away. And so I want to ask you, at what moment did you say, I can do that? And I'm going, like, what really caused you to say, I'm going to fill out my paperwork and I'm going to do this?
I think a couple years ago when I started seeing the election process and who was running, and I would pay attention to who was actually putting information down on their platform and saying why they're running, and looking at other candidates that wouldn't put anything down and they just have a sign out there. And I wondered why people would vote for one person or another. And I started spending more effort in picking people I felt that would help our community, and versus people that maybe they didn't have any plans, or they weren't voicing any direction or ideas. And so over time, as elections progressed, and we went to districts, and I thought, well, you know, my education's in public health education, and one thing I learned during one of my classes was that policy making was part of public education. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, okay, that is so true, because as someone who makes decisions for a city, you could influence or have some sort of say over, you know, our public water access or sewers or the types of housing that's being built, or what kind of parks we're going to have. And all of that comes from our city council local level, and just having that knowledge base of, you know, that background and knowing ideally what is healthy for our community and what promotes health and safety and that mental health aspect. When people feel safe, they feel better mentally, and that changes how they interact with each other and either increases or decreases stress levels. And they're all interconnected.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. I have Jessica Giannola on the phone with me. Jessica is running she's a candidate for the Chico City Council to represent District 6, which is the east side. It's sort of a long, funny-shaped district, but it more or less runs from, you know, the northeastern side all the way down the eastern side to the south. And it's... If we had a green line on the east side of Chico, her district is right there. So Jessica Giannola, you talked about public policy, as your background is public health, and through your education and watching Chico City Council meetings and getting to know the players and the policies that were being discussed, that your background was needed, as you see it, to address some of our deeper problems here in Chico. Talk about what are the most issues that you see facing Chico in general, and then maybe also District 6 in particular?
Right, and we do have some very strong common issues throughout the city. And that's going to be, of course, housing, affordable housing access. So our city would need to be able to have available units here that people living in Chico can rent at a rate that they can afford with the income they have. And that is a huge, huge issue for our Chico residents, as we do not have enough. And so we have this housing crisis, which is mirrored all over the United States. But being post-campfire, our available units dropped even further, and our price rose substantially for what was available. So having also a background of working as a housing case manager, I'm very aware of what our barriers are that people that live here face when they're trying to rent somewhere. And also having a personal background of living unhoused as a child, I know how that feels to be someone living without a home or running water or access to bathrooms. And so that those are needs that our whole city faced. And our whole city would like to see clean parks they can go to and not worry about someone might be, you know, as they're living in a park, they could be, while they're cooking their food, inadvertently start a fire because of our dry woods and our dried fuel. We call it fuel, that is happening from our drought process. And so everyone is likely fearful of a fire that could destroy their home, like we've seen happen in Paradise. So these common issues. District 6, we live along the edge of Chico, on the edge of fields. And some of these fields are areas where we would typically do a backburn. So if there was a fire threatening the city of Chico, our area bumps right up against the edge of where we would start that protection phase. And so if there is a fire or fire risk, we're on high alert that our homes will be impacted first, and the risk of losing our homes is high. So we have that concern, and I'm dedicated in doing everything within my power to ensure that we have those fire safety aspects in place, and that we're, when we are building and adding more homes to our city, that we're doing it carefully so that we're not increasing that risk of fire as we build. And so we just have those different concerns in District 6.
Jessica Gianola, I just want to sort of go back. I sort of feel like, why did I not know this? But I want to go back to a comment that you made where you said, you know, one of the problems as you see it is the lack of affordable housing, the lack of available units. And then you went on. I mean, really, you sped through it, that I want to kind of go back to your comments. You said, as a housing case manager, and I thought, okay, great. So you understand, you know, the homeless crisis. And then you said you understand the barrier because you were unhoused as a child. And so you have that lived experience. And so I think it's very interesting, and I want to kind of get your reaction is, you know, of course, my question is, how are you going to address this? But just to kind of, you know, put my question into a larger context is, you have this lived experience. You understand that there is a lack of affordable housing, and the fact that there is a lack of affordable housing results in, you know, you said the problem, one of the problems was, you know, having, we all want to have clean parks. And if you, and one of the reasons that we don't have clean parks is because we don't have affordable housing. And you understand through a lived experience of why people, or how to get out of this state of homelessness. And so I'm surprised that I didn't know this. I didn't read it anywhere. So I want to just offer it up to you to say, if you are elected on the Chico City Council with this experience and the acknowledgement that we do have a problem and that interconnectedness between a lack of affordable housing and people camping in the parks, how do you address that on a city council?
Well, it's from what I'm seeing now, when I look at our current city council and their approach to the housing crisis that's local and the people that are living without homes and not in shelters, I see the approach coming from a place of misinformation. The city actively moves people from location to location, and the presumption is that the people being moved from one neighborhood to another will get tired of being moved around and would then, as a result, decide to go ahead and get a job and get a place to live. And that seems to be the assumption that will take place, or maybe they'll leave the area to another city and live unhoused. But I know from working with clients and that struggle with numerous barriers, I know what they are. I know how difficult they are to overcome without policy change. I know what it's like to live unhoused myself as both a child and as a young mom. I was a single mom at one point and was in shelters as an emergency. And I know what those barriers are. And when you're living in a survival state and you don't have an income, then you're faced with how do you survive? And if you have children, how do you protect them? And that is something that can be done if the support structures are in place and the access points are there. And pushing people around, that doesn't create them. It's policies that create those and partnerships that create those. And knowing that and knowing those is how you, that's half the battle. Because then you're able to start getting those barriers removed and more access points in, and that helps solve this lack of housing. It's going to be with zoning changing and just a numerous amount of things that I do not see happening with our current council, and the main approach is just move people around.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. I have Chico City Council candidate for District 6, Jessica Gianola, on the phone with me. Jessica, the third sort of major issue that you pointed out is, you District 6 is that eastern edge of Chico, and it's really on the edge of the open space in the valley if we move towards the east. And I want to wrap this all together because my next question was about the Valley's Edge development project. And so instead of saying, how are you going to address that, you know, that your concern about the area that would protect the Chico, gosh, my words aren't coming, that would protect fires hitting Chico, coming down the mountain hitting Chico, was this area. And there is a proposed development that would that is along the Skyway up to Paradise, just north of Highway 32. And if Valley's Edge is approved, we've covered it many times here on this program, it would it's proposed to build about 2,700 luxury homes, and it would include private parks, and you know the infrastructure would have to be built, and it's very low density, and it's outside of town, and so the concern is contribution to climate change. And so talk about, as a need for more housing, talk about your position with Valley's Edge.
Right. And when we look at, say, our general plan for the city of Chico, one of the things that is addressed in there is housing and providing and ensuring that enough housing for different socioeconomic categories are available. And the city of Chico has not been able to, over the past number of years, put enough focus towards that low income or income-based properties that are needed. And that's why we're seeing, that's partly why we're seeing such a crisis at this point, is the efforts weren't put into building those low income units. A lot of effort went into high end. And to see this huge development with very pricey price tags attached to them, we know just by looking at how much they're going to cost that it's not going to address the housing needs of the people of Chico. It's not going to avail any units that the people with SSI and under $1,000 a month, their maximum income, they're not going to be able to afford these places. And Chico needs to, at this point, put a lot of effort into making sure that these low-income units are available for families and our city workers and nurses and teachers and people on SSI. That's what our focus needs to be. And Valley's Edge will not address any of that. And it's so huge. And it will take up multiple resources of construction and supplies that are limited at this time because we've had a wildfire catastrophes and we're already stretched thin. But all of the resources will be pointed in essentially the wrong direction at this time.
Jessica Giannola, in, I only have about, two more minutes with you. So I know that you have, as a candidate, you have a lot going on, especially today. So I won't take up a whole lot more of your time. But I do want to touch on the issue of the hotel, because because it's in your district, and or it's in District 6. So it looks like the hotel may actually be built right next to California Park, which is on the corner of Highway 32, on the edge of Highway 32 and Bruce Road. And just as for listeners, we covered this a few weeks ago. For listeners, just as a reminder, the Planning Commission had rejected the application to build this hotel based on arguments that the project did not fit within the city's general plan, and it wasn't consistent with climate action, it wasn't consistent with the neighborhood, so on and so on, and that's what the Planning Commission had said. That decision was just overturned a couple of weeks ago by the current city council, and it looks like that hotel just may be built. Jessica Giannola, do you have a position on that project?
I do, and I was so disheartened to see that the overturning of the Planning Commission's decision to say no to that development, and the City Council approved it anyway, despite all of the voices of concern from the people living in that community. Historically, people, our older generation, are the ones who suffer the most when there is a wildfire, and they have a concern because there's road access points with this hotel right there that's right in the beginning of their community, and it doesn't fit with the general plan, and there's multiple reasons why that location was just a really bad idea, and it was approved anyway by the city council. So it was just, I did not support it, and it's hard to see people who go and voice this, they're asking for help, and the city essentially just refused it and went with their own idea versus the idea of the people. The people spoke and were denied.
Yeah. It is a struggle because, you know, the general plan is created essentially by public input, you know, and so we are asked to help contribute to this plan that will guide the city's development so people participate in that. And then it's adopted by the elected council. And then the Planning Commission reviews that application to build the hotel. And the Planning Commission said it's not consistent. And so I hear you when you say it was disheartening for the current council to say, we're going to do it anyway. And so it's a bit of a struggle. It's a bit of a struggle. Yeah. Jessica Giannola, I know I don't have any more time with you. I know you got to move on. But give listeners some idea on where they can find out more about you and your campaign.
Well, I do have some social media pages, and I also have a website. The website is Giannola for Chico City Council 2022.org. So Gina is Giannola. So Giannola, FOR, Chico City Council 2022.org.
Is there anything I forgot to ask you?
Oh, I cannot. There are so many topics.
There's so many. I know.
Need to cover.
I know.
Yeah.
And we don't have a whole lot more time to open up a can of worms. So, Jessica, I do want to thank you for your time. Again, we talked earlier, and I know how busy you are today. But if anything comes up, let's bring you back on here, and we'll just keep plowing forward. And definitely appreciate your time today. Good luck. Good luck with all the other interviews you have going on tonight.
Thank you. And you have a nice evening yourself.
Thanks to you, too. All right, we are going to take a real, and just as a reminder, that was Jessica Giannola. She is a candidate for the Chico City Council, running to represent Chico's District 6, which is the eastern side of Chico. We're going to take a really quick break. Oh, here's the appropriate moment to say, as a reminder, all of the candidates running for office in our area, in the Butte County area, any sort of level of government, any overlap, whatever, all candidates are welcome to appear on this program to talk directly to you, the listeners. If a candidate has not received my personal invitation, they can join me anytime. I encourage you to send me an email, sue@kzfr.org. All candidates are welcome. We're going to take a really quick break. When we come back, we are going to turn this conversation to California Proposition 1. Don't go away. You are listening to KZFR 90.1 FM.
Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans they made put an end to you. I walked out this morning and I wrote down this song. I just can't remember who to send it to. I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you again. Won't you look down upon me, Jesus? You gotta help me make a stand. Just got to see me through another day. My body's aching and my time is at hand. I won't make it any other way. Whoa, I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. Seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you again. Been walking my mind to an easy time. My back turned towards the sun. Lord knows when the cold wind blows, it'll turn your head around. Well, there's hours of time on the telephone line to talk about things to come. Sweet dreams and flying machines in pieces on the ground. Oh, I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you, baby, one more time again now. Thought I'd see you one more time again. There's just a few things coming my way this time around now. Thought I'd see you.
All right, and we are back. You are listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio, based right here in Chico, California. My name is Sue Hildebrand. We continue with election issues, and we turn now to California Proposition 1, which, if passed, would amend the state constitution to prohibit the state from interfering with or denying an individual's reproductive freedom. Reproductive freedom is defined in Proposition 1 to include a right to an abortion and a right to contraceptives. Joining me on the phone from San Francisco to talk about the larger context of Proposition 1 is Shannon Olivieri. Oh, I practiced this all day. Olivieri Hovis, who is the director of NARAL Pro-Choice California. And according to their website, quote, the 4 million members of NARAL Pro-Choice America fight for reproductive freedom for everybody. Each day, we organize and mobilize to protect that freedom by fighting for access to abortion care, birth control, paid parental leave, and protections from pregnancy discrimination. I am so happy to welcome you to The Real Issue, Shannon Olivieri Hovis.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Sue.
So give us a quick overview. Give us an overview of where we are today in terms of reproductive freedom and access to abortion services in this country. And of course, what I'm really referring to is talk about the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe in late June.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. The landscape is dire. I don't think that we can say anything except that at the outset, the landscape is dire. We knew that the Supreme Court was poised to overturn Roe v. Wade, and we've known that for a long time since they allowed Texas's extreme ban on abortion to go into effect just over a year ago. Even before that, when they decided to take up this 15-week abortion ban out of Mississippi in the first place, because, of course, any ban was blatantly on its face unconstitutional in contradiction to Roe v. Wade. So we knew that this would happen. But since, what we have seen, and to no surprise, is that many anti-choice states and state legislatures are scrambling to get abortion bans enacted, and currently 14 states have total or extreme bans on abortion in place. And that means that the people in those states, pregnant people of reproductive age cannot access the fundamental and critical care that they need if they do need abortion care, and they are forced to get that care out of state.
Shannon Olivieri Hovis, you mentioned that, you know, we've known for a long time that Roe would be overturned. And some of the criticism that we've heard quite a bit since June is that the pro-choice movement was not prepared for this eventual overturning. That where were you and how come you didn't have everything in place ready for this? Even the draft opinion was leaked months in advance. I think it was months in advance. So talk about how organizations like NARAL and Planned Parenthood had prepared for this moment.
Yeah, I think the thing that we need to keep in mind is that the anti-choice mechanism, and they represent a very, very small minority of the American people, right? We know that 8 in 10 Americans support the legal right to abortion. And that is across the board, across genders, across age groups, and across the country, even in our reddest states. But they have been working on overturning Roe v. Wade for the last 50 years. And the only way that they were able to accomplish that was by finding a mainstream champion in Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald Trump gave them the crown jewel, which was a 6-3 anti-choice majority on the Supreme Court. So when we talk about really the nuts and bolts of how we got to where we are, that is why we are where we are. But reproductive freedom and the movement for reproductive freedom has been in this game for a very long time. The thing that we have to do is reframe things now, because things are bad and they are likely going to get a little bit worse. But then they're going to get better. And here's what I mean by that. Even with Roe standing, lots of states, a handful of states, had only a single clinic that provided abortion care still standing in their state. That is not access, right? You don't have access.
Right, right.
If in the state of Missouri, there's only one abortion clinic in the entire state, right? So what we know is that public opinion has so far moved in the direction of reproductive freedom on this side. Like I said, 8 in 10 Americans support the right to legal abortion. That doesn't necessarily mean they would choose abortion for themselves, but they do not believe that the government should be interfering in our most personal and intimate decisions. These decisions that should be made with our healthcare provider, with our faith, with our families, with our most loved ones, about what's best for our families. So I do think that it's really important for folks to keep in mind that, like I said, the landscape is really dire. And it may get worse, but then it is going to get better because public opinion is on our side.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. I want to get back to what you're talking about right here. I want to go a little bit further into California Proposition. First, I want to talk about California Proposition 1, and then I want to circle back on some of the things that you just said. But let's talk about Proposition 1, which will be on the ballot, which, for listeners, you will be receiving your ballot sometime the week of October 10th. Everything is mailed in. So Shannon Oliveri-Hovis, talk about what exactly voters will be asked to decide.
Proposition 1 is really straightforward and very simple. It would specifically enshrine the right to abortion and contraception in our state constitution. And so it is the single most important thing that Californians can do to protect access to abortion and contraception in California for generations to come. So I want to pause there. Like I said, the single most important thing that we can do, and really, really straightforward as far as what it actually does. So a yes vote ensures that abortion and contraception are protected.
So I thought you were gonna keep talking. Well, good. Then let's keep going. I mean, it really is sort of that simple. It really is that simple. Vote yes, and it will be guaranteed. One of the things, I mean, as we have looked around the country and we see the decision in Kansas, where, you know, a pretty conservative, pretty red state in a special election put the issue of abortion on the ballot, and a ban on abortion was defeated. It was a shocking moment. And I think, and even that happened in a conservative state. So here in California, very blue state, very liberal state, what do you say to people that say, hey, it's California, why would I even bother voting? We're not going to overturn this. It's not like we're going to lose reproductive freedom here in the blue state of California.
It's funny, right? Because we think of, sometimes our memory is short. But California has not always been blue, blue, blue as it is now.
Right.
So this constitutional amendment specifically ensures that the protection of abortion care, the protection of contraceptives, is not subject to shifts in the political winds. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yes.
Right now, we do have protections for abortion and contraception in our state constitution. I'm sorry, in our state laws. And it was also found by our California Supreme Court that there is a protection to abortion within our right to privacy.
Yes.
But of course, we just saw with the U.S. Supreme Court that when a right is embedded within another right, sometimes they take that away. So we were supposed to have a right to abortion embedded in our federal right to privacy, but the U.S. Supreme Court recently decided that that's not the case. We need to ensure that that is not on the table in California.
Yeah.
That the protections that we have here don't depend on who's in our state legislature and who's the governor.
Right.
Don't depend on who the governor has appointed to the California Supreme Court. The people get to say, this is a right, these are rights that we want enshrined forever, because they're fundamental freedoms that should not be subject to any kind of change in the political makeup of our state.
Shannon Oliveri-Hovis, it's interesting because you bring up the right to privacy, which is the principle on which Roe was decided back in 1973, right, where, you know, the Supreme Court back then said a woman in those kinds of intimate decisions, a woman has a right to privacy in making her own reproductive choices. And so that was the law of the land. Of course, the overturning of Roe and the argument of the Republican Party and the anti-choice folks was, no, it shouldn't be protected in the Constitution. It shouldn't be nationally protected. It's a states' rights issue. And so it's interesting as you now make that point about, if it's a states' rights issue, then, all right, California, we need to make a decision. Do we want to ensure that women have, or everybody has, access to abortion and contraception? So I want to ask you to let's talk about a really a head scratcher of a moment last week, I think, where the Republican Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina came out of nowhere and said, wait a minute, I'm going to introduce a national ban on abortion after 15 weeks, after, as you point out, 50 years they have been saying this is a states' rights issue and this should be not be decided at the federal level. It is not protected by the right to privacy. Help me understand, what on earth is Lindsey Graham doing? Is it pure politics? Is it hypocrisy? What is going on from your perspective?
What everyone needs to understand is that they never intended to stop with Roe. They never intended to stop by overturning Roe v. Wade and sending this right back to the state. What they are truly seeking is a nationwide abortion ban. And that should be enough to light a fire under all of us to really turn out this election for Prop 1 and to do things like hold the House. That's critical here in California. Like I said, it is just the case that they've never wanted to stop at just overturning Roe v. Wade. And it's not just abortion that's on the chopping block right now, right? They're also trying to take away contraception. They're trying to take away our ability to engage in family planning, to specifically, you know, make plans about our reproductive lives, our bodies, our futures, our families. These are very scary things, right? And then it goes further. On their agenda, too, is gay marriage. On their agenda, too, is LGBTQ freedoms. These and democracy and civil rights. These things, these attacks are coordinated. And we shouldn't look at this issue in isolation like, oh, they were just going to turn over Roe v. Wade, and now it's the states, and they're going to let it go. That would be a mistake.
Yeah, exactly. Let me just say, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. So really, I have an expert here, and so I want to take advantage of this moment. Again, you said much early in this conversation that 8 out of 10 people in this country support access. And you even said, even if they don't want to get an abortion, they believe that the government shouldn't be getting into your business like that in those intimate spaces. It's not the government's decision to make those kinds of choices for you. With 8 out of 10 people, Americans, supporting access, safe access, it is so confusing. I guess that's the right word. It is so confusing for me to be looking at this issue and to see how there's a shift in the rhetoric. And what I mean by that is the overturning of Roe, and then Lindsey Graham coming out and saying, we do want a national ban. If it is true that 8 out of 10 Americans support access to safe abortion, it just seems like bad politics, bad political tactics for somebody like Lindsey Graham. And I want to throw it out there that Marco Rubio from Florida, Senator from Florida, said, yeah, me too, I want a national ban. It just seems like they're shooting themselves in the foot in terms of pushing this forward. And maybe they're just oblivious to the fact that access to safe abortion is so widely supported. Help me understand this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting, right? Because Kansas is such a good test.
Yeah.
People were shocked by the outcome in Texas. But again, it just reaffirmed what we already know. And I would want to make one point about what happened in Kansas. In Kansas, it was 20% of the vote, the no vote to against the ban, right? Because in their case, the constitutional amendment, the proposition was inserting a ban, right? Would have put a ban into place.
Right.
So 20% of that no vote against a ban on abortion and allowing the Kansas legislature to ban abortion, 20% of that vote was independent, no party preference.
Mm.
And in Kansas, their primary is a closed primary. So unless you are registered with a party affiliation, you can't vote on anything. The only thing that they could vote on, being no party preference, being independent, was this ballot initiative. So a huge percent of people came out,
they can't
vote anything else, but they came out just specifically to vote that down. Because when you put abortion on the ballot, when you put reproductive freedom on the ballot, it is overwhelmingly supported. So a lot of what's happening with the Republican Party is that people are supporting anti-choice Republicans who are taking up the mantle of these really extreme anti-choice organizations, and Republicans are supporting them in spite of their position on reproductive freedom, not because of them.
Right.
Right. And so we've seen that Republicans even, and remember that this did not used to be a partisan issue at all. And I think Kansas proved that it continued to not be a partisan issue, even as the Republican Party has continued to try to make it a wedge issue.
Yeah.
Public opinion on issues of things like LGBTQ freedom and reproductive freedom has moved so much, you know, and I was born into a generation where these freedoms were fundamental and they were, you know, continued to be more and more obvious.
Right.
And so taking them away is just, over the long term, really not on the table for people.
Exactly. It's I want to go back to your comment earlier where I said, you know, give us the political landscape at the moment, give us that context. And you said, okay, well, let's think about it. Things are really bad right now, but they're going to get better. And I want to just, in the last couple of minutes that I have with you, is to kind of dig down deep into that a little bit. And I think this might be where you're going to go. So let me ask my last question for you. Well, my second to last question is, put the idea of access to abortion and contraceptives in the context of Congress, and talk about this moment in the midterm election where, of course, the president's party usually loses seats, loses enough seats that loses at least one house in our Congress. It's not looking quite that way anymore. Talk about the importance of this midterm election specifically around access to or reproductive freedom, access to abortion services, safe abortion services.
Yeah, what I like to say is Rovember is coming.
Nice.
And the 6-3 anti-choice majority on the Supreme Court, they're the ones that created this set of circumstances, right? Rovember is coming. Abortion is literally on the ballot. Mm. In many states, like Michigan, the outcome of this election will determine whether abortion access is protected or banned in the state of Michigan. In the state of Arizona, the outcome of this election could determine the same thing. In Georgia, same. They currently have a 6-week abortion ban in place.
Ugh.
Right? So in so many of these states, we are talking about literally this election will determine whether people have the ability to make their own personal decisions about their health care, right?
Right.
Now, as it goes to more broadly, Congress, we have to protect the House. The House has already passed federal legislation called the Women's Health Protection Act, which would enshrine, essentially codify the protections of Roe v. Wade into federal law. So it would be a national protection.
Hmm.
The House has passed that. The Senate has not. If we have two more senators, which is doable this election, if we have two more senators and we keep the House, then they could actually do away with the filibuster to get this done.
Yeah.
And then that would override, right? That would override these bans that have taken hold in places like Texas and you know, Georgia and Ohio and all across the country, that is having devastating impacts on real people's lives.
Right, right. So bottom line is you have to vote in Rovember. I love that. But for folks listening now, you're going to get your ballot the week of October 10th. Fill it out, close it up, sign the back, throw it in the mailbox. Don't even have to put postage on it. Shannon Oliveri Hovis, where can people find out more about California Proposition 1?
It's very simple. It's protectabortion.ca. If you search for that online, you will find out everything about the proposition. Protectabortionca.com.
Protectabortionca.com. Shannon Oliveri Hovis, Director of NARAL Pro-Choice California, thank you so much for your time, and really appreciate the work that you're doing. Appreciate you being here with me tonight on relatively short notice. So I
absolutely.
Yeah.
Good to talk to you, Sue.
Thank you. You too. All righty. Bye-bye. All right, that brings us to the end of this edition of The Real Issue, which is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar uses products from local farms and ranches to support community agriculture. They are open every day for lunch and dinner with curbside pickup, and they're located at 2359 on the Esplanade in Chico. For details, you can find Farmstar Pizza on Facebook and at farmstarpizza.com. Just as another quick reminder, tonight at 7 o'clock, starting in 3 minutes, the Oroville City Council, the mayor of Oroville and the treasurer of Oroville will be having a candidate forum, again, starting at 7, hosted by the League of Women Voters. You can see it via Zoom. Just go to Butte County League of Women Voters and you can get the link right there. Tomorrow night is Paradise Town Council, Paradise Parks and Rec. Tomorrow night at the Paradise Town Hall, so in Paradise, in person, starting at 7. And then next Tuesday, the Chico City Council and Chico Unified School District will hold its candidate forum starting at 7 at the Masonic Hall in Chico. All right, well, that brings us to the end of this edition of The Real Issue. Of course, we will be back next week, and it makes sense to me, unless I hear from some of those candidates that I can't seem to get a hold of, we're going to continue with ballot propositions. So make sure you come back, same time, same channel, and until then, where are my buttons? Until then, peace out.
Song is addressed to my sisters. Any man who is present may listen. Any priest, any public official, any physician. But it gives him no license to touch us. We make the decision. Me and Lydia, Rosie and Josie and Dee. We handle these matters ourselves. You'd better believe. Or you'd better leave. Rosie Jane, are you pregnant again? Rosie Jane, you can hardly take care of the four you had before. What in heaven's name? Was it love? I'd had an extra shot on top of what I got. In a word, I was drunk, so was Bill. At least I think it was Bill. And I forgot to take my pill. I guess it was God's will. Rosie Jane. What in heaven's name were you thinking of, Rosie Jane? Was it love? While that baby is a child, he will suffer from neglect. Be picked upon and pecked and run over.
This is FM 90.1, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next is Right On Air, which is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Mount Shasta Springwater Company, serving the community for over 2 decades with natural spring water bottled at the base of Mount Shasta. Mount Shasta Springwater is available for home and office delivery at 1-800-922-6227. All right, we had a good run of new guests for the past few weeks, but tonight...